The following Dharma talk was given by Ron Hogan Green. Hogan Sensei is a lay teacher in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org.
Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. I was recalling, I'm not sure when, but 1988, maybe 1990, I was living in Conifer, Colorado, which was 9,000 feet up in a very nice log home and subscribing to the Mountain Record. And I think I had been here once for a weekend. I was coming to the end of my training under my then current teacher, but nowhere near satisfied. And I got in the mail a copy of the Mountain Record. And on the cover of the Mountain Record was this chubby monastic dancing. And it's in black and white, I guess it was brushed. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, that's interesting. This doesn't match anything about my ideas of Zen practice, let alone Zen realization. So that takes me to today's koan from the Blue Cliff Record, number 74, Jin Yu's and the Rice Pail. At each meal, Master Jin Yu himself would bring the rice bucket to the front of the Zen hall, dance there and laugh loudly, saying, "Dear Bodhisattvas, come and eat rice." Zui Dao said much later, "Although he behaved this way, he was not being kind." Comment. A monastic asked Chang Qing, "What does this mean?" And Chang Qing said, "Much like joyful praise on the occasion of the meal." So this is a koan, and I read Daito Roshi's Teisho on it, didn't understand any of it, but it stuck with me. I knew I was missing something, no idea what I was missing, but I was missing something. So the commentary, one of the commentaries on this koan says, where was his intent? Was he just summoning the others to eat? He always struck the wooden fish, beat the mealtime drum, and personally announced the meal. So what further need was there for him to take the rice pail and do so many tricks? Was he crazy? Was he expounding by design, meaning teaching, taking the Dharma seed? If so, if he was expounding this matter, why didn't he mount the jewel flower throne to knock on the seat and hold up his whisk? Why did he need to act like this? I picked this koan because before the Ango, Shugen Roshi and Hojin Sensei and myself were talking about the Ango theme. And Shugen mentioned he wanted, one of the things he liked about the theme was that there was some space in it to explore. And I thought this was a good koan to explore that space. So Jin Yu, or King Yu in Japanese, was one of Master Mazu's 84 Dharma heirs. So Master Mazu, great master, early on, he was in the mid-700s, and his teaching style was of strange words and extraordinary actions. So we can see it in his Dharma successor. Zui Dao, or Secho, came a couple hundred years later, and Chang Qing came not that far later, but 150 or so years later, so they commented on this koan. So the Ango theme is moon-thusness. And moon-thusness is all-pervading. We can choose to practice it, and at the same time, we can also trust that it will find us wherever we are, if we practice with integrity and intent. So what does that have to do with this koan? What does that have to do with us? So Jinyu, for 20 years, would bring the rice bucket to the front of the Zen hall, dance there, laugh loudly, saying, "Dear Bodhisattvas, come and eat rice." For 20 years. In the preface to this koan, it says, "Wielding a sharp sword in hand, all complications are cut through. With the clear mirror hung high, the words of Vairocana come forth. In self-mastery, Jinyu quietly puts on his clothes, takes his meal, and in a mystical and playful samadhi, what will he do? See the following," which is the koan. Isn't it interesting that in Jinyu's mystical and playful samadhi, the words of emptiness, Vairocana, Buddha, come through to us? He's quietly putting on his clothes. He's taking his meal. So what will he do indeed? Is he acting out of routine? We do our routines here, wherever we stake out the space of our life. Jinyu did this for 20 years. Where was he going with this? You know, sometimes we talk about how teachers teach. And one of the ways that is always mentioned is they teach in ordinary interactions. Sometimes it's very subtle. I can remember when I was Daidoroshi's attendant, how the morning, the early morning would begin in Sishin. I would stand by the door downstairs, just inside in front of the altar there, with my, I forget, 5 or 6 incense sticks shaking like a leaf and hoping I wasn't going to break it or drop it. And down the road would come a set of lights and a it was a Jeep. It had a very distinct sound. If I was in the Zendo and that happened, the lights would bounce through the windows and you'd see them on the walls and reflected off the ceilings. And then he'd drive up and the door would slam. It wasn't one of these nice, easy closed doors back then. It was a Jeep, a descendant of the Willys, World War II Jeep. And he would come in the door, that heavy door. This is the one we have now as a replacement. The old one was even clunkier. And I would scramble to get the inside door open for him. Don't drop the incense. Da-da-da-da-da. And he would come in and he would make, he'd do canton, start the canton process at that altar, and off we'd go. He did that with some variations for a long, long time. 20 years, 25 years, I don't know how long, a long time. Just about every morning, at least in my experience. And somehow that went into me. I can't explain how, but it did, that process. A couple of years ago, I was at Fire Lotus Temple, and a visiting Soto teacher came. She was very curious about the temple. She was a Soto priest, and she was there to find out about the temple. And I think she came on Friday and Saturday morning. I was in the Zendo sitting early. And it's a temple, so people come down just before I would get up and start canton. I mean, just before. She came a couple of minutes before, and she saw me sitting there doing zazen. And I got up and did canton and came back. And later she came up to me and she said, "That is so helpful for you to sit there while everyone comes in doing zazen. What a gift I said, it's not my gift. It's somebody else's gift. That's an offering to you. Do you understand? In Sishin, Zazenkai, and other times as well, we recite the sutras. We chant on opening the bowls, the names of the Buddha. We do that twice a day during Sishin. When we eat our morning meals, we recite a sutra in thanks and joy upon receiving the food. How do we understand these routines? How do we practice them? Did Jinyu's action have no special meaning? Was it simply liturgy that we do over and over? Did it have a special meaning? What was it? We've been studying moon thusness in the Gendra Koan, as you have probably heard many times. But this is the first time. Dogen says enlightenment is like the moon reflected on the water. The moon does not get wet, nor is the water broken. So just stop there. Stay with that. The moon is reflected in the water. Moon isn't getting wet, nor is the water broken by the reflection. Although its light is wide and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle an inch across. The whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in dewdrops on the grass, or even in one drop of water. The whole sky. I have to say that in my mind, when I read this again just before the talk, my mind was Hojin bending over and drawing that just as it is. That's what came alive for me. Thank you. So where is the moon reflected? Is it in the puddle? Is it up in the sky? Is it in your mind? Shugen Roshi told the story, I think, Sunday, commenting on the koan, the wind and the flag, and the monks arguing, is it the wind, is it the flag? And then much later, a group of monastics stopped at a monastery and took up the argument, and a Zen master, overhearing that, them arguing on the wind, is it the flag, what is it? She said, it's not the wind. It's not the flag, and it's not your mind. Of course, in the koan, the famous koan, the sixth ancestor says, it's your mind that, it's not the wind, it's the flag, it's your mind that's blowing. And she says, it's not even your mind. So where is it? And asking the question in this manner, where is it? We are missing something. What are we missing? What assumption are we making in that question? That we can't quite see. Because there is a fundamental assumption about reality that's being missed within that assumption. Moon thusness is the awakened expression of our life. It is full. Nothing is missing. Not of you, not of me, not of anything. And yet when we look at the moon, be it the body of the moon, or our body of practice, or each other, or any other thing, what do we see? So let's look at the moon. It has phrases, right? We have a slightly different view of the moon each night. We can describe how the moon looks with the eight moon phases or shapes. I have them listed here, but I'm not going to read them. Although I looked up tonight as a waning crescent, which means up there, will be a little crescent, and I guess tomorrow night will be no moon at all visible. So what is the moon? Relying on our senses, we know what the moon is, right? Even allowing for the different views, each night different, we know what it is, right? Yet there is a dark side to the moon. Isn't that interesting? The side we never see. We can't know in that sense. Our senses don't help us. There are some pictures of it because a satellite has gone around it, but a picture of the moon is, well, you get the idea. So that's the moon. Do you and I have a dark side that may not be visible to others or to ourselves? What does it mean to be visible anyway? What does this have to do with moon thusness? Why does Dogen say over and over and over again, you should study this and study this and study this some more? When are we done studying this stuff? Tomorrow? The next day? Dogen says, when the Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it is already sufficient. I think in some ways, not necessarily applying to the Dharma, but also that's our kind of base view of reality. We look at something and we think it, we know it, that's sufficient. But reality is not filling our mind. When the Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. Do we realize that however we see, clearly or not, whatever we think, wherever we place ourselves, something's missing? And yet, can we place ourselves so that the reality of this moment is us? Within that, nothing is missing. What is missing is your expression of your practice that does not rest in expression or understanding. What is missing is we are understanding. We are expressing it as we think it is. With each of our unique karmic life, we bring forth our true nature with awareness or not. We bring forth the Dharma, phenomena, as a being. We can only bring forth our own unique expression of moon thusness. Each of us can only bring forth our uniqueness. That's the treasure of our true body. Within that uniqueness, there's a wholeness that is everybody, everything, coming forth as that uniqueness. And how we bring that forth matters a great deal. Within our uniqueness, we have the ability to create evil, or create goodness for ourselves and others. But look at the details. Look at the teachings that I mentioned earlier of Daito Roshi and others. Very small. Didn't take the high seat. Didn't. I sometimes think of how many teachings I've missed and are missing with my present teacher and past teachers. But they echo back. There's still more opportunity. One master, no matter what question was asked, held up a single finger, which was like this. Cut away all concepts. For Lynchy and others, it was a slap in the face. Time and place, were different. It was appropriate then. Maybe not so much now. Maybe. Shakyamuni in the Heart Sutra, in the version we chant, sat in complete stillness. He didn't say a word. Avalokiteshvara is speaking. Not Shakyamuni. Isn't that interesting? That's fascinating to me. In all these examples, they're directly revealing moon thusness. It's as if they've unwrapped a Tootsie Roll and placed it directly in your mouth. Traditionally, that's a lychee, which was probably the candy of ancient China. But for me, it's a Tootsie Roll. In all these examples and many more, what is being shown to us beyond our concepts and ideation? In the moon thusness fascicle, and I'm going to say what I've been here since Friday. Last Friday, I've heard it 4 or 5 times. But I'm going to quote it again because it's so pointed and, to me, so helpful. Shakyamuni Buddha says, Buddha's true Dharma body, as it is open sky. In response to things, forms appear. Thus is the moon and water. The open sky, boundless. Dada Roshi always used to say, there's no place to put this enormous body. Boundless. And in response to that vast boundlessness, forms appear. This is the moon in water. Dogen goes on more subtly to say, the thusness of this, thus is the moon in water, is the moon in water. It is the moon in water. It is water thusness, moon thusness, thusness within, within thusness. This does not mean like something. This means exactly. Exactly. How do we see without metaphor, interpretation? How do we hear without cognition? And yet we are conscious. We are fully alive. Can we see and feel the Buddha here? Where is the mind where we not only relate to and understand these words, which after all are only words, but directly enter, directly. This does not mean like something. That like something is a thought. Doesn't matter what the thought is. It's whatever our karma or consciousness manufactures out of our conditioning. Thus does not mean like something. Thus means exactly. Can a thought contain this? Does understanding reach this? In one way, a thought can contain this. Right? A thought. You have a thought. Thus. Can we begin to see Jinyu here? More importantly, can we begin to appreciate our own seeing, our own dancing, our own songs as our voice of the Dharma, which inevitably takes us to Hakuin's chant and praise of Zazen? Has to. Our thought is no thought. Remember, I just said, can a thought be thusness? Our thought is no thought. For years I puzzled over that. Our dancing and songs are the voice of the Dharma. How bright and transparent the moonlight of wisdom. What is there outside us? What is there we lack? Nirvana is openly shown to our eyes. This earth where we stand is the pure lotus land. And this very body the body of Buddha. At each meal, Master Jinyu himself would bring the rice bucket to the front of the Zen hall, dance there and laugh loudly, saying, "Dear Bodhisattvas, come and eat. Come and eat rice." Master Jinyu would do this personally, bringing the rice pail, dancing, calling out, "Dear Bodhisattvas, come and eat rice." When the meal cook hits the meal bell, it's personal. It's personal in hitting the meal bell. Is Jinyu right here laughing, dancing? "Come, come, Bodhisattvas. Let us eat." And dancing down the stairs to the altar and lighting and offering incense and food. Can you imagine Shugen Roshi doing this? You might say it's not his style. And probably it's not. But I ask you, what is his style? Can you see that? So why do this? Certainly it's liturgy. Certainly it's making visible what is easy not to see and appreciate. Certainly it's inviting us to appreciate, to acknowledge how many lives are being offered to our life in a bowl of rice. I mean, have you ever thought about that? How that rice gets there, how many lives go into that bowl? So that's worth acknowledging. It's wonderful in a way. It offers us our life to live, to share, to honor. L'chaim, to life. But why does Zwaudo say, although he behaved this way, he was not being kind? Seems to be kind, generous. So was he being unkind? If he wasn't being kind and wasn't being unkind, then what was going on? And why later does another monastic ask essentially the same question in a different manner? An ancient worthy said, "Dear Bodhisattvas, come and eat rice." What does it mean? Cheng Qing said, "Much like joyful praise on the occasion of the meal." Although it seems like it's being explained, Cheng Qing is not explaining here. This is the freedom. This is what I didn't get when I saw that cover. What shape does it take? How can it come forth? You know, we train in a monastery, and there are so many endless, do it this way, not that way, forms, rigor, zazen. Are we doing that for the sake of being in a life of a steel silo? What's behind that? In life, we encounter situations where we have no choice. We must encounter them. We can run away, and of course, that has its own karma. That's heavy, heavy, heavy when we run, and leads to what? What does running away lead to? More running away. Everybody sitting here knows that in one way or another. So, what is Jinyu rejoicing over? It reminds me of the koan, where the master responds to a question with, "Every day is a good day." Is it a good day if your lover died? Well, how does that work? Why is every day a good day? Are we talking about the happiness and sadness of the moment? Are we talking about the happiness and sadness of you getting what you want over a week or a month or a year or a decade? Are we talking about living your life in a way that for me personally has inspired me? So that when I close my eyes for the last time, maybe I'll have the sense that I've lived my life as well as I could have. Mistakes and all, but as well as I could have. I owe you that. I owe you that. What you owe me, that's none of my business. Zhaodou's verse. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. I'm sorry. From among the white clouds, laughter rings out. Bringing it with both hands, he gives it to others. If golden-haired, they will follow him, even thousands of miles away. Although our practice is filled with liturgy, please don't misunderstand. Recall why Bodhidharma came from India. Recall why Bodhidharma came to this hall today. Recall the transmission of the Dharma from awakened person to here in our space and time. We know that each of the so-called gates of practice fully contain the practice of awakening to the Dharma. It contains it fully when you enter fully. Pick any gate. Pick any paramita. Take it to the bottom. It all leads to the same place. We know that each of us uniquely manifests our true nature. And we have the opportunity to realize it and express it in our living it. This is the thusness of the moon within the thusness of your life. That's the thusness. Alive, living, practicing, questioning, sitting with it. Chenqing said, Jinyu's actions are essential nature totally revealed. It's the real Jinyu who dances before us. He had to do what he did, but he could never tell you why if you asked him. It's just like a crab walking sideways. The crab wouldn't be able to tell you why he walks sideways if you asked him. He just does it. Here's a poem on Jinyu's rice pail. Want some rice? A golden red leaf twisting its own dance in the autumn wind. Is it receiving or is it offering? Each day a chant. Each day the sun shines and there are clouds. Received or offered. Each day a dance. Is it new or is it old? How will you eat your rice? Receiving or offering? Goes on and on until no rice, no eating, not even a bowl. Now, what is revealed?
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.